If you don't believe in heaven, where does lightning come from? That's what we call a checkmate.
Houston, we have a problem.
Hello and welcome. Today is Wednesday, the 18th of September, 2013, and you are listening to The Pseudoscientists, the official podcast of the Young Australian Skeptics. I'm Belinda Nicholson, and joining me this week is Jack Scanlon.
Hello.
And special guest Alan Duffy.
How's it going?
Welcome, Alan. Nice to have you with us. What do you do? Why are you here?
Thanks for having me, guys. I'm an astronomer from the University of Melbourne. I try and figure out how galaxies form. And I do this using supercomputers to basically create baby universes and watch gravity take over just after the Big Bang and form this gorgeous-looking galaxy by the present day.
That sounds pretty interesting. Must be some interesting questions that you're answering. But I think there's a question that we might need to answer first, and that's why so many astronomers have been on this podcast. We're swimming in astronomers.
And as a non-astronomer... amazing.
I feel very threatened.
Oh, come on. We've had biologists on the show.
Yeah, I guess so.
Lots of biologists on the show.
Not too many. Not enough. We need more. I'm making a formal pledge for more.
Then one day we should probably get some chemists on and maybe some psychologists.
True. We do need some chemists. If you're a chemist and I know you and for some reason I haven't thought... and you're listening to this show and I haven't thought to have you on, then slap me around the head and ask me. I don't know. I don't know too many chemists. It's kind of strange because you think of biology and physics and chemistry as the main sort of three sciences, and I guess that's kind of correct, although there's a few extra ones. But chemistry is sort of this weird area where it's all sort of industrial or like nanotechnology, and that's kind of it, really.
Or biotech, there's biochemistry. Oh, yeah.
I'm familiar with biochemistry, Belinda.
Yep.
In which camp is the biochemistry? I would have... thought that was definitely more in your biology sphere.
Well, that's the thing. It's actually in the past, I guess, in 80 years ago, you would have had regimented areas of science that didn't interact. Even within biology, you would have had like paleontology. Oh, that's almost geology as well. But, you know, paleontology and genetics and stuff, they were completely separate. And then it took the modern synthesis to sort of bring them together into the modern theory of evolution. In physics, you would have had, I don't know, optics and... thermodynamics or something, and they would have been completely separate, and then they were brought together at some point in the past. And now you have like quantum chemists that are physicists and chemists together that work on the physics of atoms and molecules. And then you get biochemists that are chemists and biologists, and you get, you know, geophysicists and chemical psychologists? No, I don't know. That's like psychopharmacology.
We've run out now of all the
Yeah.
No, but yeah, science is hugely multidisciplinary. So
get them on, sure.
Yeah, exactly.
Stop asking astronomers like
you. If you're a psychopharmacologist, let us know. So it's great to have you on, Alan. I'll forgive the fact that you're an astronomer because what you do is actually really interesting.
If it helps, you can call me a cosmologist. Does that make it feel less bad?
Yes. Yeah. Sounds grander.
Well, then that kind of evens it out because I'm not a cosmologist, so yeah. I don't do cosmology.
Yeah. So three separate fields are represented here.
Exactly.
Today. That's
exactly.
Fine.
Just two of them are very, very similar.
Suspiciously similar. Yeah.
So, Jack, how's your week been? What are you up to these days?
I'm breeding flies, which I wasn't doing a lot of before, and I'm doing that now. And I have to do this thing called virgin collecting or virgin picking. So when you do a cross, you want virgin females.
Did we just laugh at virgin, by
yes,
the way?
Oh,
yeah, you're very mature. You have to collect virgins, and yes, they're female flies that haven't mated. And you do that because when you do it, set up a cross between two different types of flies, you want to make sure the females haven't mated so that you expect a ratio that mathematically you can work out just with the cross. If they've mated before with their own kind in their own vial, then that'll throw out the numbers.
How does one female not being a virgin affect their... because I'm like, I don't... my genetic material doesn't change if I...
Okay, so let's think about it in another way. I have flies with white eyes and flies with red eyes.
Yep.
And I want to cross them together and see what happens.
Yeah.
if I have females that are white-eyed flies and I don't get virgins, they may have mated and have eggs inside them.
Oh, that are okay. That's
from
it.
From white-eyed males.
Okay, so it's that they store the eggs inside them.
They're not like humans where it's quite obvious when they're pregnant and they can only have one or maybe two or sometimes three children at a time. They can lay like 300 eggs in their lifetime.
Okay.
So, it's kind of hard to tell if they're pregnant or not, or if they've mated or not. So you'd hope that the white-eyed females will only mate with the males that you want them to.
Okay.
So that you would expect the ratio that you're working out. So that's what I'm doing. And basically to get flies that haven't mated, you have to wait until they hatch from the pupae or they emerge, and you only have a small window of time. It's really kind of annoying, really. You have to watch when they do it, so you have to come back every couple of hours. And then once they do, you tip them off onto a thing of CO2 that knocks them out and then separate out the males and females and then keep the females by themselves, because female flies can't get themselves pregnant, even though, aphids and other insects can. Flies are not parthenogenic. So that's what I've been doing. I've been looking at a lot of flies. I'm also doing computer stuff that involves visualizing genes, which I'm getting frustrated at because I don't want to have to do a lot of coding. And it turns out that in a lot of science, you have to learn computer coding.
Yep.
And I'm very mad about that.
Why?
I don't know. Coding's fun.
Who lied to you that this wasn't the case?
I wasn't lied to. I was just misinformed. So that is a big part of my life, and it's very frustrating. I don't know. I shouldn't complain. It's quite easy stuff, really. I just fear change. That's why I'm a scientist, I guess. No, it makes no sense. Yeah. What have you been up to, Belinda?
Pretty much similar things.
Have you been mating animals together?
No, I haven't. What I have been doing is a lot of coding. I've been working on trying to get software to install properly on my computer at Swinburne. It's only taken me like 2 weeks to try and get this to work. And then like end of the day, like 5 minutes before I had to leave yesterday, I finally got my thing installed properly and it was working. And I'm like, okay, well, that's it for today. And so today, this morning...
You realised it had broken itself overnight.
No, thankfully, I didn't even turn it off. Like, I just left it as
it was.
No, but
that's when it happens.
Oh, okay.
When you don't do anything, you come back and it's ruined.
The reason why it's taken me 2 weeks to install this is because that exact thing happened, is that I left it for a couple of hours and came back and it didn't work anymore. So,
do you know what's really interesting? Scientists talking about coding problems. It's the most entertaining thing.
It makes for
it
good.
Is.
It's a great
audio.
Podcast.
It's riveting. Oh, it's riveting. But yes, it's.
Maybe we should
just read code. I'm on a phone in right now.
Amazing what technology can do.
Yeah, it is. It is. It's amazing. But I have to say, Google has not let me down.
Yep, there's a lot of stuff out there of people having the same issues and being willing to complain about it for the benefit of other people.
Lots of interesting things about acceptable temperature ranges for GPUs. My computer got really hot today and I was a bit worried, so I Googled what the acceptable computer. Apparently 70 degrees Celsius, you start to get a bit worried.
I would get worried if I was 70 degrees Celsius.
Can I ask a biologist about this? Because I've...
About computers.
Maybe
a bit of a dangerous territory.
I read or imagined that having a laptop on your lap could be actually detrimental. It's running so hot that you're having issues as a bloke in that region. And I recall this being going back to your mating story, but it was definitely lowering sperm.
In the pelvis region?
Let's be scientific.
It's potentially the case. It's getting a bit.
I've seen the
strange.
Sperms come back. Like you stop doing it, and a couple of weeks later, you're.
Oh yeah. Okay. So you're probably not going to have heaps of issues. So I'm not qualified in this area particularly, but I'm imagining you're not going to have heaps of issues if it's like a couple of hours of heat. If you've got that amount of heat on your legs in that area for like 12 hours a day for weeks, then there's going to be some issues there. The reason that the testes are outside the body is that they want to get away from the internal body temperature. So sperm doesn't develop properly at 37, 38 degrees Celsius. So yeah, it's probably going to have some issues if it's long term. I don't know. I wouldn't recommend it as a form of birth control. Just because, you know, it could harm your legs. Like 70 degrees on your skin isn't great for long periods of time.
Well, yeah. Even a short period of time, that would be terrible. But
Well, apparently, so, this was for the Intel IMAX. This wasn't for, they had different rules for like, this was like the standard like operating temperature. Maximum operating temperature for this particular type of GPU.
Okay.
So speaking of ridiculous things.
Excellent.
Great segue.
Yep.
I saw a segue the other day. First time I've actually seen a legitimate segue within 5 meters of me. I've seen them from a distance, but I was too scared to go
as
close.
As opposed to an illegitimate segue?
Yes, yeah. So it was just tied up on a pole next to the medical building, and I'm like, someone rides a segue in Melbourne. That's a thing that happened.
Speaking just segued of segues.
From segues to segues. Speaking of segues, okay.
Today's Houston clip. What up with that?
Well, it's not serious. We're going to put that up front. You know, I don't want people to think that we weren't being skeptical about this ridiculous video. I don't know ahead of time which part I put at the start of the show, so I won't mention anything in particular. But if you watch the entire video in the show notes, then it will quickly become clear that it is a parody of creationists and their mentality. They're very easy target, I feel. Mm. As someone who has spent a significant portion of my life talking to and about and getting into arguments with creationists, I don't know, that it seems like a bit of a cheap target to me.
Yeah, I mean, it's a great example of, what is it, Poe's Law?
Yeah.
That you can't, the parody of extremism and extremism on the internet are indistinguishable.
Pretty much, yeah. So parodies will always be taken seriously by some proportion of people.
Yeah.
I think maybe we're a bit blasé about it in Australia because a significant proportion of our population are not creationists. Yep. In America, it's a bit of an issue there.
Mm.
In Australia, it's not quite so much of an issue. But, I don't know. I guess there's always going to be people that take it seriously, so you might as well show how stupid it is. I don't know. I want to know the percentage of people who actually thought that video was real, like who were actually creationists. It's like good arguments, yeah. Mm. Global warming is related to everything and isn't true because, you know, it's still snowing in parts of the world.
Yeah, I mean, it's similar arguments that, I mean, I know creationists. My year 8 English teacher was one and probably still is one. Yeah, and the arguments sound pretty much the same as what I'd expect her to say at times.
Okay, well,
A
bit sad.
Yeah, it is. It is. But hey, it's hilarious. And
yeah, well,
and
I guess there's no harm in laughing at people that actually have a skewed vision of the view of the world that may actually lead to harm. There's no harm there.
Mm.
No, it's an interesting question whether or not mockery is a good way to critique that. I guess just within our own circles, it's funny.
It is.
So
it is.
You might as well just do it.
Also, the guy speaks in a funny accent. I don't know if that's actually his accent and I'm just insulting him here.
I don't know. Yeah.
It's a very...
It may have been... I wouldn't be surprised if it was put on.
Yeah.
Just, you know, stereotypical Southern American stuff. Ah, cheap shots. Cheap shots.
Yup.
Oh, internet, what have you come to?
News items coming up in today's show. We have Australia. What up with your lack of science minister? We have a grad student that proves gay marriage is wrong with science. And Ellen's going to be talking about the Voyager 1 leaving the solar system again. Maybe again.
Again.
It just looked around, came back, did a bit of a circle, went through. You know, passed go twice, got an extra $200.
Closed universe. It just came back on itself.
Exactly. I think that's the most plausible explanation, as we mentioned.
Exactly. So, Jack, do you want to update people who either aren't in Australia or are in Australia and have been living under a rock as to what has happened in the past week?
Not really, because I would rather not have this thing be real. So we have mentioned the past two episodes that things have happened in Australian politics. We've got a new government, and it's not a particularly science-friendly government. I mean, they're not particularly into climate change. And one of the things that they've done that reflects this lack of scientific understanding and appreciation and proper governance, really, is that there isn't a Minister for Science anymore. There has been a Minister for Science in Australia for about 80 years.
Since 1929.
Yeah, around there. So it's a bit unprecedented that this has happened. It's a bit annoying. There's still people in our government that will be dealing with science. It's just been split up in a very strange way. So the Minister for Industry now controls apparently half of the science portfolio, and then the Minister for Education now controls the other half, I guess, because it's higher education. So, you know, science is done in those ivory tower universities and they require governance. And then the rest of science that isn't ivory tower is directly applicable to getting as much money as possible. So I think we can safely split science up into those two areas. They don't have to come into contact with each other. There's no such thing as industry-university partnerships anymore. It's not like I work in an institute that is actually founded on that principle or anything. I wonder if my building's going to be cut in half. That'd be quite interesting. So this is just another depressing thing. This has sort of come at the same time as people realised that there was only about 95% of people in our cabinet that were men, only 95%, which is really, it's too low. It should be 100%. Mm-hmm. I don't know what women are doing in politics. They have no right to be there. There's no reason for them to be there other than to, you know, have children who could potentially, if they're male, be in the government in the future.
Mm.
So it's depressing all round, really.
I think it was phrased best, as an Australian comedian put it, thank God the white Australian man finally has his day and his voice in politics. And that's a nice sentiment.
Mm. Yep.
We've been marginalised for too long. This is clearly the white Australian male's time to rise.
I don't think anybody understands. As a white Australian man, I've had it tough. And I'm just glad there's someone in politics. Just 95% that this is okay.
They have your back, Jack.
They do.
They have your back.
Finally, someone's looking out for me. But this is 95% of people in our sort of upper echelon of the government. Mm. That's the cabinet.
So in
the ministers that do things, they like education and industry and apparently border security and border mm-hmm. control, which is
okay. That's a new one.
But not science, not youth issues, not climate change. There's no Minister for Climate Change anymore. Apparently climate change doesn't exist. That's a good thing. So this is, I don't know. On a symbolic level, this is quite frustrating. Some people have doubted whether or not this is going to have a properly sort of tangible outcome when it comes to affecting science in Australia. Some people are like, well, it's probably not going to be too much of an issue because there's still people dealing with science. They're just maybe not doing it in a very holistic way. I don't know. What do you guys think? Is this actually going to affect science in Australia? Or is it just, I don't know, an annoying thing that is kind of symbolic?
Yeah, symbolically, it's not great. It doesn't look good that the science minister has been removed, the post. I'm actually going to go with famed Nobel laureate Brian Schmidt, Professor Brian Schmidt. That, let's just wait and see. It might not actually end up as bad as everyone fears, but certainly straight off the bat, symbolically, that doesn't look good.
Well, fair. I think the only thing we can do is wait and see, because unless we storm Government House and Parliament House and...
we could storm Government House as well.
We could storm both and, you know, get rid of the Governor General, everything like that. Who needs the Queen anymore in this country? We're not going to be able to change it. People other than me, voted in this government. So we kind of have to stick with it. So yep. I don't know. It's just a depressing thing. I don't know. I have a feeling that Australia is really going to not take this well in the scientific. It might, you know, people lose confidence. I don't know. Researchers won't want to come here. Okay, that's a bit hyperbolic. I legitimately have no idea how this is going to affect anything.
I think the slightly more worrying thing for me is that one of the policies that the coalition announced just before, like 2 days before the election, was that they were going to review the ARC, so the Australian Research Council, funding
model. I think we mentioned that last week. But
did you?
It's okay. Well, not in a lot of detail. It's actually really annoying and potentially really damaging, really.
Yeah, it's that the government wants to have, looks like they want to have a bit more of a hand in, I retract that, probably not. I think there's a danger that the government might change the model and it be detrimental to the way that funding happens.
I think AKA, that the whole... Yeah, the government may be able to choose which things get funded and which ones don't.
Yeah.
Based on what they think has a good outcome.
Politically rather than... Yeah. rather than scientifically. And I think that's why the ARC needs to be kept somewhat separate from the day-to-day politics.
They should hand over that money for safekeeping to somebody else. Maybe a...
Someone super trustworthy?
An independent lab. Somebody that's white and male and has a proven track record in in influencing politics in this country. Yeah, me. Yeah, so... I don't know. It's a bad time to be someone who gets upset about science and politics.
Back to the idea of just cancelling the Minister for Science, I'm not disappointed in the thought that maybe research and industry work more closely together. Personally, I think it would be fantastic if I could have a year or two in industry and then still be able to come back into academia, that the door is not closed. Because the reality is you leave and you're gone.
Well, the thing is, there already is that connection. So the CSIRO, which is our major research institute, has industry in its name. It develops a lot of agricultural things, like genetically modified crops. It takes like 20 years for things to come out, but it comes out. You know, there's a lot of checks and balances. And that goes into industry, fuels our agricultural stuff. There's heaps of stuff there in, you know, mining and geophysics and chemistry and lots of stuff like that. So... there's already a great industry connection. The place I do research at, Bio21, it's got something called the business incubator, where businesses hire out labs and do stuff there. And they're right next to the people that have all the fancy machines and get ARC funding for climate change research and things. So there's already those connections. And I don't think it needed to be strengthened particularly. The problem with having too much industry involvement in science is that you start to get a bit of a business taint where projects only get considered if they have a commercial outcome. And you always need those blue sky research things. Like cosmology doesn't particularly have any immediately, you know, economic benefits. Like potentially the technology and the techniques used and the general information that's received and processed and theorized about has outcomes that benefit the humanity as a whole and potentially industry in the future. But, you know, studying how black holes form is not going to lead to $1 million patents in the next 2 years.
Of course, that's the actual example that did, right?
Yeah, it can in the future, but you don't do that research. You don't get a grant funded by saying this research is going to lead to this, that's going to, you know, bring money to our economy. That may be a spin-off.
I absolutely agree that.
To some extent you do, don't you? And when you're writing your ARC grant, you have to state what you have to – there's like a paragraph of implications for wider society from what you do, from what you do with this funding. So to some extent you have to put some kind of community relevance to it.
Well, there's always going to be community relevance to science, but it's not necessarily going to be economic relevance.
Well, it's hard to put a number to it, and I think if you – you can go down the wrong way of working with industry where, as you say, everything has to have an actual approximate number that you're going to generate. And that's difficult. That's going to shut down a lot of innovative and, as you say, blue sky research. The Wi-Fi patent, of course, coming from exploding black holes. Mm-hmm. That's an incredible example of just a smart guy following a passion, trying to see these exploding black holes. And then, wow, look, an innovative solution was created that then gets spun off in some other way. That's exactly how I would like to see the sort of the industry role working. But my point was actually a little bit more on a personal level of just trying to encourage academics to go into industry and vice versa, you know, for 1 to 2 year positions so that you get this cross-fertilization of best practice and you get, you know, techniques from both sides coming in. That's a nice sort of future dream of how research and industry could work. Not that research gets made into an industry sort of format where you're pitching to the boss to get your money for whatever project, but rather that you're trying to genuinely take the best from the both industry and research through this exchange process, which does not really happen. CSIRO, I think, certainly from an astronomy point of view, you're quite separate. You're still quite separate to the industry. And so those kind of links could be strengthened without losing, I think, research. But just saying, where's the money at the end of the day? That's going to be damaging for research. There's just no doubt about that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I guess, yeah, only time will tell what is going to happen, but it's not looking great. I don't know.
Yeah.
Maybe I'm just pessimistic about just the outcome of the election in general. I don't think that...
Still hungover?
I wasn't actually hungover. That was a good thing.
Oh, I was.
yeah, when you're not going to... This isn't the last time you're going to hear about Australian politics on this podcast, people.
No. Nope.
We've entered an era...
Not for the next 3 years.
Of satire and complaining.
Yeah. Yeah. Ellen, do you want to tell us about the Voyager 1? What is this thing and what has it done?
So this is the incredibly exciting news that you might have also heard before, but Voyager 1, a spacecraft launched in the 70s by NASA, has finally left the solar system. This is fairly exciting and it's fairly familiar because we have actually heard this before. Because there's a lot of ways to define the solar system.
Yeah, Alan, what is the solar system? I think we need a definition. I guess people know roughly what it is, but how do astronomers and astrophysicists define it?
If you take it to be just the planets, it extends out to Neptune. So that's pretty far. If you include the dwarf planets, you go to Pluto, you actually go a little bit further. If you characterize it as everywhere the sun's... the solar wind, the crazy radiation and particles that come from the sun, giving us, northern and southern lights, that can go a little bit further. And that's actually where Voyager has just passed through, that the sun's solar bubble, it's called. The biggest definition, it's actually the one I would take, is where the influence of the sun's gravity is lost. It just becomes another star. You're so far away that it's just another star in the Milky Way, and you wouldn't fall to it, for example, if you were at rest. Although you can't be at rest. You're always relatively moving to something.
Yeah.
I just thought special relativity. It's still on my mind.
Yeah.
And physicists, just what you say doesn't make any sense. I can't believe people believe what you say.
That's good stuff. Let's not talk about special relativity.
Yeah.
But that radius extends all the way out to essentially a couple of light years nearly. It's an incredible distance.
Wow, potential. The effect of gravity, of our sun's gravity, goes that far.
Technically, it goes everywhere, really. But it's just, it peters out.
It peters out
quickly.
Yeah.
And other stars. You're beginning to come closer to other stars now.
Yeah, so okay.
How many light years away is Voyager 1? What fraction of a light year, I imagine?
So Voyager 1 is 120 AU, which is an AU is the distance from the sun that the Earth resides at on average. That's 8 light minutes. So someone do that.
8, so what, 100 and something?
About 1,000 light minutes.
About 1,000 light minutes, yep. So not anytime soon. Like, light years are crazy. It's going to basically take another 40,000 years for Voyager to get to the nearest star, which is, you know, give or take a couple of light years.
Well, it's going better than anything else that we've sent out.
Oh, yeah, yeah. It's the furthest by a huge margin. Voyager 2 is, of course, a couple of years behind, but that's really it. It's an incredible probe, an incredible statement of human engineering to get that far.
Yeah, and it was built in the 70s, so I imagine it's pretty, you know, gaudy and... It's got flare jeans on and listening
amazing.
To disco.
It's actually got a golden vinyl record.
It does.
Wait, is it made of gold or is it made of vinyl?
It's made of gold.
Gold, but it's, you know, but a vinyl disc.
Okay. Right?
You play it on a gramophone and it's called the golden record and it has...
Well, let's just hope that aliens have gramophones.
Well, assuming they can figure out... Assuming an alien captures Voyager... Then they figure out that's the bit they're supposed to look at.
Yeah, and then doesn't use like the golden plate as like a plate and eats off it.
Yeah,
that
so
would
there's
be
a lot of
very disrespectful to our culture.
Well, what's incredible is a lot of cultures are represented on this disc. You can play it and you can hear various peoples of the world. And there are actually two Aboriginal songs on that.
Oh,
so
cool.
The Indigenous Australian songs are actually going to the stars, which is a really nice idea.
Hmm.
We were talking about units of iPhones as computing power earlier, right? That, you know, the new iPhone 5S is now the Mac from 2008.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And just to put this in context, and this is a classic example of Moore's Law, apparently Voyager is rocking about a quarter of a millionth of an iPhone's worth of memory. So that's great. It's a little eight tape recorder.
So what we need for people to do is get their old iPhones. I mean, even an old iPhone would do, and just throw it as hard as they can into the air. Hopefully, at least one of them will escape Earth's gravity and you know, eventually catch up with Voyager. How fast is Voyager moving? I'm pretty sure someone could match it, right?
It's about skills. Yeah, it's about 17 kilometers a second.
Oh, that's doable. That is doable.
It's a good pitching arm, that.
Wonder how much kinetic energy something would have if it was going that fast.
What would, if only there was a way to calculate
that. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Like, would it destroy a wall, or would it just destroy a person? Or?
Oh yeah. Look, I mean, 70 kilometers a second is an incredible speed. A paint fleck is going, you know, a lot slower than that, and it can go through the International Space Station.
Okay.
So that's to put it in context. And Voyager's not small either. So.
Well, you heard it here first. Your iPhones are potentially weapons of mass destruction.
If you throw them fast enough.
Or if you just let them pollute by not properly disposing of them.
So why is there debate whether or not Voyager has actually left the solar system?
So there's no debate that it's left what's called the helio sheath. So this is the solar bubble. This is the classic idea that
where the sun keeps its sword, just scabbard sheath for the.
Wow, I wasn't going. I didn't get that one until you actually explained that.
There wasn't anything to get.
So it's the solar wind pushing out against the interstellar space, and this is a fairly definitive edge now. It's called the heliopause, and it's basically where the wind just runs out of steam, just can't push any harder against interstellar space, and it's a pretty obvious jump because the density jumps by a factor of 40 or so. So Voyager, it was pretty obvious that it passed, although only in retrospect. So actually Voyager left on the 25th of August, 2012.
It's a conspiracy. Whoa. I can't believe they were, you know, keeping that from us.
That's science and it's embargo.
No, there's something going on here. There is a deeper level. Someone was withholding this information. And it could have only been the lizard people that run our governments. They would have access to this. Coming from another planet, they have surveyed our solar system. They know where the heliopause is. They were planning for this day. I think all we need to do now is go back, look at the stock market around that time, work out, you know, what companies were bought. It goes all the way to the top, guys.
Can I get out of this room? The door's not locked.
They are locked. And you're going to have to give me 10% of your income if you want to hear the rest of the tale.
I think my final point about Voyager is something that happened a couple of decades ago, but it was that Carl Sagan had Voyager turn around and look back at the Earth. And we were this impossibly small, pale blue dot. And that was it. That was all of Earth, all of human history contained in that tiny, tiny little point. And it was a really humbling moment for, I guess, anyone at the time who heard of it and since. But what's kind of fun is that NASA didn't really want to do it. It took Carl to actually really push on them to turn the spacecraft around to actually look at the Earth, because they were worried even that far away from the sun took light about 5 hours to get back. I mean, it was incredibly huge distance away. They were still worried that the sun would blind the spaceship. So that's... I'm glad they did turn around the craft, but they did actually only do it after they'd surveyed everything else they wanted to look at, just in case the craft went blind.
Yeah. Did the craft go blind?
No, I don't think so. No, okay. It was all
right. Yeah, no, I know that picture, and it's like the size of a pixel or two. Like, it's tiny, and it's blue.
No, it was Photoshopped.
Actually,
and you know who did it? Those lizard people.
Oh, that's an interesting thing, though. Is it the blue dot? I mean, what sort of camera was that? Was that actually a color CCD, or is that a false color?
Like, oh, it was a millionth the camera capacity of a modern iPhone camera.
Again,
it only had 4 pixels or 8 pixels. It's amazing that Earth fit. It was one of those 8 pixels.
Some great science.
So, some not great science that I saw on the internet.
Flawless, Blender, flawless. What a connection.
I'm sorry, what can I say? I try.
Yeah, and that was a compliment. That was not sarcastic.
It was very professional.
Yeah. Do you know what's more
the
professional?
The bit that followed wasn't super professional, but that was great.
Do you know what's unprofessional? This.
I found this amazing article on the internet that is entitled Science of Gay Marriage.
It's been doing the rounds.
It has been doing the rounds. It's been doing the rounds on Facebook. It's been written up in a few websites and blogs and
scientific
other
journals.
News
it's
articles.
Very scientific.
He's trying.
Almost scientific.
He's saying the only reason why he can't publish his research in a scientific journal is that he doesn't have the money for it. Because you
open
need to
access.
Pay. Yeah, well, yeah. You should try.
It's the cost of doing business.
And I say good luck to him. Because
basically. Do you actually say that?
I say it in a very
professional way
because I just don't think this will never be published in any scientific journal ever.
I don't think you should judge it before you read it, so let's go ahead
exactly.
and see what it says.
So he's basically saying that he's done these scientific tests to prove that gay marriage is in fact unnatural and wrong,
mm-hmm.
and that homosexual relations are wrong. And he's done this in several ways. He's not just restricted himself to one mere branch of science. He's gone for proving it in physics, in chemistry, in biology, and in mathematics.
Oh, my God. He's a true multidisciplinary scientist.
Exactly.
This is what happens when you get branches coming together. We get magic like this.
Exactly.
This is a true, you know, display of what we can do as a species when we put our minds together.
An old school natural philosopher.
Oh, he's a Renaissance
It's a synergy of all of these disciplines.
Modern-day Da Vinci.
Yeah, it's fantastic. So he's a postgraduate student at the University of Lagos in Nigeria. So he's not a professor. He's done this research, but he's claiming no one else has done research quite like this before and has not found anyone who has done this research before.
And don't worry, it was Google Scholar. It was okay.
Exactly. But this news article in This Day Live, a Nigerian news website, which does actually seem to be legitimate.
Yeah, so we were tuning our skeptical eye to this and thought it might be a bit of satire or potential fakery, because that does tend to happen these days. People get sucked into these things and they are just fake and a bit of a joke. But this looks pretty real, unfortunately.
It's a bit embarrassing, I think, for the university if they ever want to really...
Again, you're judging before we've even heard the arguments, though. And I'm guilty of that as well.
But we should just lay it out.
So the physics...
What's his physics proof?
The physics proof is... It says here, I used 2 bar magnets in my research... A bar magnet is a horizontal magnet that has a north pole and the south pole. And when you bring the 2 bar magnets...
Oh, no, he's
and you
not
bring
saying,
the north pole
oh,
together,
God.
You'll find that the 2 north poles do not attract. They will repel.
That's one line of evidence. Another line of evidence is that there's no such thing as a gay bar magnet. So...
Can we just play
that doesn't
gay
actually
bar? gay bar.
Yeah.
In some ways, that line of evidence is more convincing, I feel, than his other research.
God, like versus like.
Hey, so if physics proves that, like, you know, magnetism proves that gay marriage is not correct, does that mean that homeopathy proves that it is correct? Because like cures like. Is that... Maybe we just have to dilute gay people in enough water that they disappear or something.
It isn't just physics that he uses. He also uses mathematics, and I actually don't quite follow his argument. He has a lot of A's and B's, and I'm just like, what?
And Belinda's illiterate, so she doesn't...
exactly.
She only understands numbers.
Exactly. But, I mean, he's really trying to sell himself here. He's said that he's proved that pi is an irrational number. Apparently that's new.
Is that new?
Wasn't that always proven?
I'm pretty sure that's been known.
Yeah, so do I.
What's his biology proof? I mean, I'm pretty interested to hear how, like, gay marriage relates to biology. Like, I mean, people aren't biological.
He's wearing a white coat, by the way, so his biology argument is probably going to be legit.
Yeah. So he used simple experiments. So he has taken a female fowl called a hen. and a male fowl is called a cock. You have never seen a cock having sex with another cock.
I guess from a physical perspective, it's a little
Not only this, but among lions, when you go to the zoo, you do not find a male lion mating with another lion. The lion will mate with a lioness.
I was under the impression that there actually was homosexuality evidenced in animals.
Oh, you'd think that. But yeah. You'd be wrong.
But I'd be wrong, apparently. So, yeah. Wow.
No, there is a lot of homosexuality in the animal kingdom. What's this chemistry thing?
His chemistry thing is looking at different types of chemical reactions.
Mm-hmm. Gay people just don't have chemistry, apparently.
Double decomposition reaction and a reduction oxidization reaction. But in chemistry...
I think it involves acids and bases.
Yeah, yeah. So when you put an acid and a base together, they neutralize and form a salt in water. When you put an acid together, they don't. With another acid, it doesn't neutralize. Mm. Sometimes it makes an even stronger acid.
Yeah.
Which just means that, you know, when gay people get married, they will form a corrosive acid that will dissolve our society. That's what he's getting at.
I thought this was going to be a lot funnier. This is just super,
it is
super
very depressing.
It is. He's basically saying that you can't mix two of the same things and get a reaction. And that's why chemistry shows that homosexuality is wrong. But I want to read you my favourite bit, the bit that kind of makes me go, okay, so either his professors, his supervisors, are having him on and having a laugh, or just the entire department's just fucked. So the article says, his works have earned him the respect of the world of science. He said, at the University of Lagos, where I currently study as a student, you will find my publications on the notice board there. When you go to the Senate building of the university, you will see the same notice there. And recently, my lecturer at the Department of Chemical Engineering told me that I will win the Nobel Prize one day because he found that my works are real and nobody has done them in any part of the world.
Nobody's ever played with magnets before.
I think it could be possible and indeed likely that no one has ever done his work before in this context. I think that's entirely plausible. I think that's because it's full of shit. This is the professor taking the piss.
I hope so. I hope the professor is.
They have to be. It's backfired, though, for them, if they have.
Yeah, it has.
No, it hasn't, because their department's name is all over the world now. I mean, people are taking them seriously, but still, it's great marketing exposure. Social media profiles are going through the roof. Followers and followers, their clout is just up there.
You know, such thing as bad publicity.
Exactly.
Even in science.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah.
No.
Cold fusion, that wasn't a thing that happened. Pons and Fleischmann, they are still productive members of society, scientific society. This is another thing that has happened that I would really like to think is not real. It's probably real. It's quite depressing. Notice that we haven't really explained why this is all incorrect, because I think everybody knows why this is all completely stupid. And I don't think we should discuss why it's not right, because if you can't work that out for yourself, then why are you listening to this podcast?
It's worrying to think of what it must be like in Nigeria for homosexual people, because I mean, this has been, it's in the news, and obviously it's being presented because it's a popular view that gay marriage is wrong. I'm pretty sure it's also illegal to be homosexual in
large parts of Africa.
But particularly like Nigeria, I think they're trying to get the death penalty imprisonment or something like that. It was something really harsh, when it's already, you are sent to prison.
Yeah. So yeah, great, great science, guys. I look forward to this being published in Science. I assume this is a bit of a pre-publication buzz.
You can't heal a broken embargo.
Oh, well,
Science wouldn't touch it. No.
Oh yeah, no, that's right. Maybe Life magazine, if we remember Life magazine. Life magazine published an article, which we spoke about on the show a couple of weeks ago. In fact, that was one of my favourite news items in the 100th episode. It was an article presenting a theory of everything but using no maths.
Oh, yeah, that was wonderful.
Yeah.
Yep.
Good, Good stuff.
Nobel Prize worthy.
Yeah. On to today's Jargonauts, and this one comes from Alan.
You're a bit
and
too,
me, sort of,
you're,
both.
You're a bit too excited about this word.
I am. It's because it's hilarious and, well, it's kind of hilarious. Cause
it's not hilarious at all.
It's not.
It's deeply worrying. That
it
the
is deeply worrying.
We're worried about you, Belinda.
It was, the term was coined, unfortunately, for astronomy, but it is.
It is. The word is harassment.
And I'm assuming this has some sort of astronomical meaning. Otherwise, Alan's just going to get a bit graphic about things that we shouldn't be doing.
Yeah, it's all going to get very weird in this room. Harassment is the technical term for when galaxies come too close to one another and disturb the galaxy. You can kind of see why this is phrased harassment. And in doing so, can actually start to stop the harassed galaxy from forming stars. It begins to change its morphology, its shape. A lot of things happen as a result of this harassment. And again, it
lawsuits.
Is lawsuits.
Intergalactic lawsuits.
Frosty glances. This is a term you hear a lot in astronomy conferences, quickly followed by terms like strangulation. I know, it's terrible.
Mm.
There's several others, actually, which are all fairly weirdly graphic.
Stripping.
Yeah, ram pressure stripping, yeah. So
yeah.
Shouldn't be laughing about this. This is not funny. So was this an in-joke? A lot of things in astronomy tend to be, like, you've got all the acronyms and you've got the sexual innuendo that's borderline terrible. You know,
yeah.
What's going on?
It's
you're
actually,
all, like, repressed people, I think.
That could be an option,
I think
option.
There needs
yeah.
to be a bit of multidisciplinary research with psychiatry, I think.
Astropsychology. I actually don't know where the term came from. I'm going to give the astronomers a benefit of the doubt in this one and assume it wasn't from some weird Freudian kind of thinking going on. But
I galaxies really go through an oral stage. Yeah. Yeah, there's issues
there. I got nothing. I can't help you out in that one. I don't know. But, you know, it goes on. There's so many cool in-jokes like black holes, a Big Bang. The Big Bang in particular was actually a phrase for, you know, tongue-in-cheek. It was a derogatory
was
term. You know, it was a mocking the theory.
Idea.
And, you know, turned out to be a good phrase. So I don't think harassment is a particularly good phrase, though. It's not something I would use myself. But I have been in conferences where that, as I said, is followed by strangulation and ram pressure stripping. And after a while, you just think, wow, yeah, maybe everyone needs to get out and have a walk.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, these are all processes that are quenching star formation, and I was in a talk today and it was someone talking about how you turn off star formation, and it was harassment and ram pressure stripping.
Did they actually make a pun?
No, but there was like,
okay.
It was, see, this was a talk aimed at sort of general physics audience as opposed to like all astronomers. So when she got to the term harassment, everyone just giggled a little bit, and she's like, yes, that is actually the term.
So. I just have to mention, as a purveyor of puns, these are not puns, really.
No, they're not puns.
They're not puns.
Yeah. They're just... I was thinking more of the joke going, you turn off star formation by harassing it.
Yeah.
By strangulation.
Laughter.
Yeah.
Some candle laughter plays. These are not my jokes, puns, whatever you would call
it's
them.
It's gold, Jerry, gold.
It.
Yeah, so that's an eye-opening revelation. Let's not talk about that again.
Okay. Deal. On to our question of the week. Our question that we sent out last week...
Controversial.
...was what branch of science research should get the least amount of funding?
So just to phrase this in another way, if you were a benevolent dictator like our overlords, the lizard people that I mentioned earlier, and you had the power to control what research got funding and what didn't at some sort of disciplinary level. So it's not like, I hate this lab, I don't want to give them any money. You know that happens in science. I want what branch of science in general should not get any funding because we don't need to fund it anymore. Or I just hate it. Or I'm, you know, just misanthropic in many ways and don't want people to be cured of cancer. So I think we'll read a couple of answers that our listeners gave before we go on to what Alan, Belinda, and myself thought.
Oh, you're kidding. I'm not touching this. I'm not going near this one.
You need
you have to give an answer.
Opinion. It can be tongue-in-cheek.
Yeah.
Just no harassment, please. So Tim says, I'd have to say nutrition, mainly because there is so much rubbish research done in that field that implies causation from correlation. I read one last night that was claiming HR factors of 50% increased risk of all diseases from consuming greater than 4 cups of coffee a day. But this was a self-reported study, so they needed an observation subset to assess the accuracy of the reporting. They also couldn't account for pre-existing confounding factors, which were already large confounders. He also said CAMs should be struck off any government teat they have, so complementary alternative medicine. They are a billion-dollar industry that can pay for their own BS. Fair enough, I guess. Yeah, there is a little bit of dodgy research going on in nutrition. The issue with this question, though, is that it's hard to label an entire branch of science as not worthy of any funding. I would say that nutrition is quite an important branch of science for a lot of reasons.
Yeah, important to get right. I think probably the problem here is that, if anything, it needs more funding so that they get the right scientists in that do proper science.
Well, you can't throw money at a problem, but you can like direct the money properly and look at the labs that are doing good things and give them money and not give the money to the people who are doing stupid things.
Yeah.
That's just generally good advice, I think, for funding science.
Funding committees
that's
try
already
to work.
How it works, yeah. Yeah, so I don't know. I'm not quite sure I agree with you, Tim, even though you have a very similar last name to me.
That is how funding committees work.
Yeah. Nepotism.
It's not really.
Yeah, well, that's what you want us to think.
So,
meanwhile, your cousin Barry over in...
Professor Duffy.
Yeah.
Yeah, no.
Over in Lancashire is raking in the millions, studying lawn bowls.
Where'd Lancashire come into?
I don't know. That's just a place I know. My grandfather's from there.
Nathan's suggestion was mining-based research. And that one's a little intriguing because, yes, mining brings in a lot of money, so if they want to research their own things, then they can fund it themselves and not have government funding. So I think that's... I'm tempted to say that that's... I would agree with that one.
I wasn't necessarily in the question talking about government funding, just funding in general. So if you were an omnipresent power that could just in some way stop money going into a certain area, just on a global scale...
Oh, wow. Yeah. Okay. Mining.
I don't know. Yeah, mining's kind of generally important for various things. I don't know how much research we need to do into it for, like, industry reasons, though, other than just finding new areas.
Well, look, but there was an amazing patent from CSIRO recently on trying to find gold deposits more accurately, quicker, and with less disturbance to the surroundings. So it's
less
just
harassment.
There we go again with that, our favorite word. And that's a great example of research that is going to make things just that little bit better in the mining sector and for the environment as well.
And they're getting gold as well, so they're getting money out of the ground. How good is that?
It doesn't grow on trees.
No, but it does grow inside the planet. It doesn't really grow inside the planet. It's formed inside stars. But the people sitting around me are nodding their head and they know exactly what I'm saying better than I do. So I don't know why I mentioned it. Someone else should have piped in. Belinda, you have dropped the ball.
Not technically
dropped
in stars.
The ball.
Well, Belinda gets extra points for that.
But what is a star when it is exploded?
It's a supernova. What?
Exactly. Supernova, but it's actually, yeah, you're right. It's actually
when is
not
a star,
in,
not
the,
a
in
star.
The core itself, but
no,
in the surrounding
it's in
material.
The surrounding material. So it's never actually in the star, no matter what way you would define a star.
No, we're all stars inside.
Well, not even a surface. Neutron star.
Yep, no, it's beyond that. It's in the cloudy layers at the top of the star.
You heard it here first. Gold does not contain neutrons. That's something we need to...
No, it does.
I knew that. I knew that.
James says, quite controversially, that generally medicine is probably overfunded compared to many other types of scientific research.
Scandalous.
Yes. He says
I'm sympathetic to this view little bit, but... Well.
He says this may be controversial, but I actually think many types of social sciences are underfunded. We spend billions of dollars every year trying to cure cancer and other really difficult and expensive diseases, but very little in conducting sophisticated studies to attempt to figure out how to better organize and run our governments, or how to reduce domestic violence, or how to promote economic development in underdeveloped countries. I think that's pretty fair.
We can't really argue with that.
Yeah.
Maybe we should take some, you know, money away from the mining industry to give it to, you know, domestic abuse stuff.
Mm.
I don't know. Yeah, that is a... So from my perspective, I do biological research that doesn't really have any medical application at all. And I always get very jealous of people who, you know, I did undergrad studies with and now work at a biomedical institute working on various things relating to medicine. And they get like free biscuits and their own lab coats and shiny things. And I'm very jealous. But, you know, at the end of the day, they are studying things that potentially could save people's lives, while I'm just looking at insects and seeing if I can kill them faster. So, you know, everything has its benefit, but I understand why people might want to save people's lives rather than maybe being able to get rid of some pests a bit faster.
Yeah, but moving some of the funding into the more social sciences, I mean, yes, you can save someone's life, but if they're then going back into an environment that's economically depressed or actually depressed with, like, domestic violence, and improving efficiency in governments can be fantastically economical.
Yeah. So, there needs to be money put everywhere, really. Mm. You can't just say, well, if we throw half of the world's GDP at cancer research, we'll find a cure, and then we can move on to that, the next things to look at. Meanwhile, billions of people are dying of malaria because nobody has any anti-malarial drugs. Or
actually, that's what I wanted to say, Ed. Not to reduce funding to other forms of medicine or, you know, branches of medicine, but tropical diseases, we are just not throwing the
diseases.
Resources.
There's so, you know,
the thing, it's coming.
Penguins have so many, you know, they just have so many, they're vectors of so many diseases. You wouldn't believe.
Are you serious, by the way?
Getting bitten by a penguin is one of the most dangerous things.
Oh, God. That can happen. So it is a joke. Okay.
Who said it was a joke?
I thought you were so serious for a second there. I really did.
Who's been bitten by a penguin? If you have been bitten by a penguin, call in. The number is 1-800-333-775. I don't know if that's an actual number.
Probably.
So it's not a weird call, no.
Mate, I was bitten by a penguin. Now my hat's fallen off.
I feel so bad if someone's actually been bitten by a penguin.
I know.
They're going to be really angry at me.
Well, don't worry. They're probably not in any pain because they're dead.
Lethal.
Lethal bite. It's worse than a spider.
Penguins are venomous. Jack.
Yeah?
What would you cut funding to?
Oh, this is tricky. I guess just from a jealousy perspective, no medical research ever again because I deserve biscuits. But I don't know. It's a very tricky question. A very popular answer that we got that we didn't actually touch on much was, I guess Tim mentioned it, was alternative medicine funding. So there's a lot of alternative medicine that continuously gets funding, even though it's been shown that it doesn't really have any efficacy. And a good example of this is in China, actually, because of the cultural situation there where, you know, communism rose up and that actually brought traditional Chinese medicine into sort of a national context where it's integrated into their healthcare system. And I don't really know too much about why that continues to be the case, but the fact is that it continues to be the case. And there's heaps and heaps of medical research institutes in China that are solely devoted to proving that things like acupuncture and traditional Chinese herbal medicines work, and they consistently either fail or produce very weak results with bad, flawed methodology. And research is just, money's being wasted there for no reason at all. So lucky that China actually has a lot of money to spare there, I guess, although there's probably a lot of people in that country that could do with things that aren't medicines that aren't working. So that would be what I'd choose, particularly in China. That's not really happening in Australia. Thank God it's not happening in Australia, because that would be an outrage.
Alan, what about you? If you had to pick something to axe funding to, what would it be?
It's a tough choice, but probably the University of Lagos.
Oh,
but we're not allowed to pick an institution. We're not allowed to pick a particular institution. It has to be a field.
Oh, jeez.
Homophobic science.
Yeah.
If you say genetics, I'll shank you in the eye. And that is a promise. Also, set a penguin on you.
What an incredibly vicious shank me in the eye. Yep. Man. Luckily, all those doctors have been funded, eh? So can save me.
For emergency eye surgery.
It's an incredibly tough one. I would say let's put more funding into tropical medicines and astronomy, and just before the election, I'll let you guys know how I'm going to fund that.
good. Yeah, don't release your costings until a couple of days before. That proven results.
Mm.
It's actually positively correlated with election success.
It is.
Enough.
It is.
Belinda, I've just got a landslide in my funding council. It's great.
Hopefully, it's not a landslide that kills people. Belinda, what would you axe funding to?
Genetics. No, probably.
Where's my shank? Because I see an eye in front of me.
You do. In fact, I believe you see four of them.
Mm. Yeah, you and Alan, yeah.
No, the four eyes glasses.
Glasses, four eyes.
You know
glasses
aren't real eyes, right? You're aware of that.
Yes, it was a horrible joke and I apologise.
It was a joke.
Okay,
okay,
cool.
that's new. Whoa, sick burn. Who needs a shank in the eye when you can destroy their self-confidence at humour? Yeah, what was
the
your
most
real
potent weapon known?
Even worse than a penguin. What's your real answer? Go on.
Something to do with Earth. I don't think we need to find any more coal. I think any coal exploration and gas exploration, I think that can just take all the funding out of that. We're kind of good. We're going to have to learn to survive without it someday.
Yep,
it might
just
as well
Mad
be
Max
now.
Scenario.
Yeah. So just
accelerate the apocalypse.
Yeah, exactly.
Or die trying.
Our question for next week is, do you think we will ever be able to 100% prove or disprove the existence of a god?
Whoa, it's a religious question. This is going to be very controversial.
Mm.
I don't know. We've had questions in the past about what argument you think is the most persuasive for the existence of God. This is a little different because we want to know in the future, you know, once we reach a huge amount of scientific and philosophical sort of knowledge and have thought about things and worked things out, do you think we'll ever become completely certain? Obviously, if you already think it's certain, then don't answer this question because it's a bit pointless. You're just going to be going, yes, and that was 30 years ago when XX published his paper on XXY philosophy thing, or you think that science disproves God, which I'm not completely sold on. But, you know, some people believe that. I don't know.
Yeah, or
let us know.
Or, yeah.
We'll be discussing it next week.
We will.
That's how it works.
Yes, and you can give us your answers via the multiple channels that we will tell you about at the end of the show.
And
but
we're pretty close to that.
Yeah, we're pretty close. But first, we have some promotion-y things.
Well, I don't know why I'm mentioning that that's a promotion-y thing because it's not quite a promotion, but it's just a thing that I have to mention is that if you want to have your voice on the show, particularly in relation to Question of the Week, then send us a clip on Audioboo of your voice. So we're on Audioboo, audioboo.fm/channel/thepseudoscientists, I think. And, well, there's a link in the show notes if you want to find that. And you can send up to 3 minutes of your own voice. If you go over 30 seconds in your clip to us, we will edit you to be not only racist but homophobic and very, you know, very ignorant about scientific research.
We'll put you through a southern accent filter.
Oh, that is bigoted.
Mm-hmm.
How dare you? But yeah, that will happen. And you don't want that to happen. We haven't actually received any yet, so, you know, get onto it. Maybe everyone's just everyone thinks I'm just going to make them sound racist whether or not they're over or under 30 seconds. That is a possibility. So
it's not, people. It's not. Just
put that in context.
Go there. We'd love to hear your voices. We'd love to have some different accents on the show.
You hear our voices every week. We want to hear yours.
Yeah.
Potentially. I mean, it depends on your voice. But
Jack,
no,
you're not helping, Jack.
I'm not helping at all, am I? Everything I say is a joke, even when I'm being serious.
Another thing to promote is our skeptical blog anthology, which we have, which we spruik every single episode because we love it and we want you to love it and we want you all to own your own copy, whether it be electronic or tree book or ebook. I liked that pun from last time, so I'm just going to say it again. You can find it on lulu.com. It's affordable. It's amazing. You should read it.
And it supports the show. If you don't want to buy a book, you can also eventually donate to us on PayPal. I haven't set that completely up yet because I'm waiting on a couple of things. The account is there, but the bun is not. So if you want to donate, if you have a burning need to part with some money and get nothing in return except for goodwill and a warm, fuzzy feeling of supporting a show that doesn't have any sponsors, then, you know, send us an email and we'll get in touch with how you can actually do that. Also, there is a new podcast that I am in the future planning to do. It's happening at some point. I have things to write. I have theses to do and stuff. But Unfiltered Thoughts is a project that's happening soon where I interview young people in Melbourne in a cafe about a particular topic. If you're a young person in Melbourne and want to get in touch and have a chat over some things, particularly beverages, perhaps, that will be hot unless you get a cold chocolate or a nice coffee or something like that. Cold chocolate, that's a real thing. And I think Tom had one of those in a cafe that we were at once, Belinda, I remember that. Then get in touch and I will put you onto the schedule. That's going to be a lot of fun. Also, another way you can support the show, I guess I should have mentioned this right after the PayPal sort of thing, is that if you go to iTunes and give us a review or a rating on iTunes, you can actually support the show even though you're not parting with any of your money at all. It's quite simple, really. You just go to iTunes, give us a review, say what you think of the show, give us a rating, preferably a good one. I mean, if you have some criticism, the best way to deal with that is go through official channels that, you know, people, other people can't see. Otherwise, you know, it makes us look a bit bad. And we
a private email that no one else can ever see would
that
be
we can
preferred.
Easily delete. No, if you have some issues, we obviously want to hear about them. But, you know, do whatever you like. We're just joking. Don't give us a 1-star review. They kept telling me not to give them a bad review, and that's very unprofessional. 1-star. So don't do that, and we won't do that either. That's it for supporting us. How can people get in touch with us, Belinda?
If they can get in touch with us.
Have the need to do that. They need to do that.
They do. If they want to respond to our question of the week or give us feedback, they can do that via Facebook on the Pseudoscientist page and the Young Australian Skeptics page. We're on Twitter, on 2 Twitter accounts, at Young Oz Skeptic and at PseudoSciPod. We've got email, youngozskeptics@gmail.com. And we also have a website, youngozskeptics.com. And you can go to the contact form on that page and see all the other amazing things that's happening on that page at the moment.
There's blogs and things. I was writing a post that should have gone up last night, but I didn't have the time, so that's probably going to happen after this show, about one of our writers, Elizabeth Raikkonen, who gave a talk at the Victorian Skeptics meeting. It was very good. I was very impressed, and I've got some things to talk about in terms of demographics in the skepticism movement, because there's not a lot of young people, there's not a lot of women, and it's interesting to see how that's going to change in the future and what's being done about it right now.
Mm.
Because I'm obviously like a white man, so I'm qualified to talk about demographic issues because I'm
exactly
underrepresented.
But at least you're a young white male. I'm an old white male. Who has my voice?
Well, I don't know. You don't have a beard, so you're not technically old until you have a beard, I think.
But you have a beard.
But I'm not young.
I don't have a beard.
Yes, you do.
No, I don't.
You actually do have a beard right now.
Not really.
It's getting to beard length.
No. Beard length? What are you on about? It's like 3 millimeters long.
It's a scruffy beard.
It is.
Just because I need to stop beard shaming me. Just because I haven't shaved in 5 days. Blah, blah, blah. Anyway, if you want to berate me for the length of my facial hair, that's very mean of you, then you can, you know, catch us on Twitter.
Yeah.
Independently, personally. I'm Jack L. Scanlon on Twitter. Tom is Lang EM High. Rachel is Rachel MK. Belinda is AU Astronomer. Alan's also on Twitter at Astro Duff.
Very creative.
Yeah.
You know, Alan Duffy, Astro Duff. What else are you doing on the internet, Alan, where people can find you?
So my website, alanrduffy.com, where I have lots of pretty pictures of galaxies that I've created, of videos of this, and of course of myself, because I'm a shameless self-promoter. I do a YouTube channel with the legend that is Dr. Katie Mack,
who's been on this podcast twice, so everyone's quite familiar with her.
And that's our Pints in the Sky, where I get drunk and she just tries to talk about astronomy. That's pretty much the format we've worked out between ourselves now.
Fantastic.
It's great.
It's good that you've split the duties up there, where you're just doing shots and she's explaining the nature of quasars.
It makes for compelling viewing.
Well, I imagine that there are actually interesting visualizations you can do where you're like throwing up and she's saying, well, that's how the spread of the matter actually changes over time.
It took a lot of preparation, but that's how we eventually explained how black holes eject jets
at both ends.
At both ends.
That's gross.
Food poisoning.
That is horrible.
And shots.
Why did I think of that? That is not a good thing to end a podcast episode on. But we're going to do it anyway because we're mavericks.
We are. That is the end of the show. As always, our intro and outro music is the song Glorious Feeling by Jolistics. Thanks, guys. Thank you, Alan, for
getting food poisoning in the name of science.
I just love science. Thanks so much, guys. Yeah. It's been a pleasure.
See ya.
See ya.
See, I don't fear the singularity if it's with Siri's voice. I think that would be fine. That would be an okay way to be ruled.
But which accent? Is it the British, the American, or the Australian one?
What do you mean?
You can change the accent. Well, you're missing out on a whole...
There's a different Siri to a different guy.
Hey, show some respect. I mean, she's going to be a real person one day. She'll remember everything you've said to her. And it'll come back to you. It'll be like Hal from 2001, even though that's a cliched analogy. It is very similar.
It's on the way.